Being right now. Let's see. All right, I'm going to call the Parks and Recreation Commission's current Parks Conservation and Maintenance Subcommittee to order. It's whatever date it is,
June 3rd, 2021.
June 3rd, 2021. And first order of business would be, I believe, the approval of minutes.
I wasn't present at this meeting, so I guess I won't vote on it.
For March 3rd. I'm in the right place here now.
Typically, what I've seen in these instances where like a majority vote is needed, but people weren't there, that as long as the people present don't have any issues with the minutes, that a vote just moves it along officially.
Okay, I move to approve the minutes.
I second.
All in favor?
Aye. All right, the public participation, anybody who's going to speak on something that isn't on the agenda should chime in at this point. And so I'm moving on to the business part of it. It's a non-standard memorial recommendation from staff.
Okay, I can introduce this one. So we have a non-standard memorial request, and as outlined in the memorial policy, non-standards are brought before the current Parks Conservation Maintenance Subcommittee to provide a recommendation that will then go to the full Parks Commission for final approval. This request is being brought forth by Louise Newton, who is joining the meeting right now. And we also have Bob Palzer, who is present, who may wish to speak on this. The request is to place a wooden bench with a 1x4 inch plaque on the Cynthia Lord property, which was recently donated to APRC and is adjacent to Bear Creek by North Mountain Park. What makes this non-standard is that the request is to make this a permanent amenity rather than putting a time period on it. And the donation would be $5,000. And in your packet, you have background about the person who is being memorialized. And I do believe there are two people in the audience who wish to speak on this.
Hi, everyone. I'm Louise Sully Minton, daughter of John Sully, and thank you so much for giving me the opportunity to speak to you today about the proposed non-standard memorial request of a permanent bench and marker for my father, John Sully, and his wife, Jean Sully, to be placed in the new Cynthia Lord Park. In order to understand the rationale for this request, it's important to understand John and Cynthia Lord's friendship and all they had in common. Before my father and his wife Jean moved to Oregon, he served as the senior field biologist for the state of California, and in this capacity, he was instrumental in the preservation of critical wetlands habitat throughout the state. When John and Jean moved to Ashland 30 years ago, they immediately became involved in the fishing, birding, and botanizing community and became members of the rogue group of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club, and this is where he first met Cynthia. He was deeply involved at both the group and chapter levels as an issue coordinator. John was elected to the executive committee for the rogue group, as was Bob Palzer, who's here today. And he was an active member of the committee for many, many years, also serving on the conservation committee for fish and water and a section chair for the Klamath Basin. With Jean at his side, my father worked tirelessly to protect the Ashland watershed and the Klamath Basin Wildlife Refuge Complex for future generations. John and Cynthia were partners and allies in this protecting of the Southern Oregon's wildlands, but beyond that, they had so much in common. They both taught their children how to fish, camp, backpack, be a quiet birder, identify a wildflower, plant a rose, pet all the kitties, and notice and observe all the beauty the outdoor world has to offer. He took joy in the shade cast by long-lived oaks, the rare summer steelhead that swam in Ashland Creek, the sound of a night heron, and the brave little flowers growing in the cracks of the sidewalk, and anyone talking to him shared in the same delight. John Sully was smart, sweet, giggly, and gentle, but could become fiery when it came to protecting our wild lands. Boy, could he write a letter, huh, Bob? The children and grandchildren of both families are all firm believers in the preservation of open and natural spaces. We feel this permanent marker in Cynthia Lord Park is appropriate based on the friendship between John Sully and Cynthia Lord, their common backgrounds, their love of Oregon's wild places, and their shared goal of protecting those places. Hannah Archambault, Cynthia Lord's granddaughter, wrote to Michael Black that her family was delighted by this proposal and fully supported it. We hope that someday someone who's been walking in this new park and open space with their head bent botanizing or their eyes to the sky birding might pause at this bench for a moment to rest and reflect, and perhaps also be inspired to spend some of their own lives working on nature's behalf. And thank you so much for your consideration. And I'd like to hand the mic over to Bob Palser, who would like to say a few words in support of this proposal. Bob?
Hi. I don't have video, but I hope you can hear my voice.
Yes.
I've known Cynthia Lord since shortly after our family moved to Ashland in 1986. The last time I saw John and Jean Sully was at a celebration of Cynthia Lord's life, which was also a fundraiser for the Rogue Group of the Oregon chapter of the Sierra Club at her home. Cynthia was very active in the Rogue Group and in the Oregon chapters of the Sierra Club. Her generous nature and her large house on substantial acreage along Ashland Creek was the site of a lot of our various meetings. It was exciting to learn at her memorial service that her home would continue to be used as a place where various groups could continue to hold such meetings in the future. It was serendipity when I went to the Lord home in early April and met with Cynthia's granddaughter, Hannah Archambault, to check out how the meeting housing was working during the COVID pandemic. She told me about Cynthia Lord Park's proposal, the park proposal and the potential to have a permanent memorial bench for John and Jean Sully. I really got to know John Sully very well. We'd often carpool to various events and meetings. John was a strong advocate for wild things. He was a great organizer. We often carpooled together. And anyway, one such trip was to the Klamath Wildlife Refuge and the sites along the Klamath River, where John had arranged for people from various organizations from Portland to San Francisco to tour the area and learn about the problems and potential of this unique natural resource. I still chuckle when I think about the time at a meeting when John mentioned that he was 80 years old. We simply didn't believe it possible that someone with his vim and vigor, that he wasn't pulling our leg. He pulled out his driver's license and passed it around to prove it. I strongly recommend that you support the proposed memorial for John and Jean Sully in the Cynthia Lord Park. Thank you.
Thank you.
Is there anybody else who would like to speak? Well, I guess it's my turn then. I have to say, I had breakfast with John numerous times at Geppetto's, and it was John and Leroy Dedeau and me, and we would talk about everything. But what I learned from those those breakfasts at the counter was how passionate he was about nature and conservation. And you're right, he would get feisty even talking about it sometimes when things weren't going well and there was an issue. And he was amazing. I'd see him at Rite Aid and he remembered my name and said, "Hey, hi, Jim, how's it going?" And he was really a wonderful individual of the amount of times I've spent with him. So I must say, if there's an exception to this, our policy, this gentleman should be, and his wife should be part of that exception. And I would hope to recommend this to the full commission. Anybody else? So I guess if there isn't any other comments, I would move to send this on to the full commission for approval.
Seconded.
And aye.
Aye.
Aye. Okay. Well, hey, thanks for the fine words, and I must say, a really fine individual.
Thank you so much, you all. It's been a pleasure talking to you today.
Yeah. Thanks for talking to us.
Thank you as well.
Bye-bye.
All right. Next on the agenda is standard memorial approval, and we'll have a background information.
Okay, so we have two standard memorials. One is an existing wood table in Lithia Park by the Upper Duck Pond, requested by Kathleen Quinn, memorializing Michael James McLean. That would be a donation of $825. And then we have something that I consider to fall under as a standard. There is an existing wooden bench that Steve Brandt has dedicated to his mother. His brother recently passed, and so he would like to install a plaque on that same bench. It would be the plaque only. The bench would not be refinished. The time frame that is currently allotted for the memorial would not change, and so therefore the price was reduced to reflect not to take out the labor and the materials and supplies. And so it is in the same formula as any standard donation.
Okay.
And that's the Steve Brandt application?
That is correct.
And then the Kathleen Quinn is just a standard and nothing unusual about
that. Yep, that's an existing table that will be fully refinished with the plaque installed.
And does anybody here wish to speak on either one of these?
They are not there. And then just for the record, I did get a last minute request to change the wording on the plaque. So it's a little bit different from what's included in the memo, but just a little bit of wordsmithing. So.
And that's on the Steve Brandt.
That is on Kathleen Quinn.
Kathleen Quinn.
Okay. Yeah, memorializing Michael James McLean.
Okay. And that fits.
All who loved him to those whom he loved.
Seems pretty straightforward. I have a motion to.
Sure, I move to approve the standard memorial requests as submitted by staff.
And I second that. All right, we're moving right along. At this point, we're going to go to greenhouse gas reduction options. This is an information only here. And we have quite a packet for it. I got to thank staff for putting this together.
Okay, so I wanted to just give a preview of this really quick. The Parks Commissioners recently, in approving their CIP budget, has dedicated $150,000 towards programs to reduce greenhouse gases in APRC equipment and facilities and the like. There wasn't a direction on exactly where these go, but as I recall, the commissioners wanted this committee to to come up with a plan. And then I believe the commissioner, the full commission wanted to see it back, but we'll have to check on that. But this committee was the committee that was going to do the work to decide what was done. We've come up with a few ideas that we wanted to propose to you. And this being the first year that we're doing this, and with the idea that it would be great to do some things that have some impact right away, we've made some proposals of some larger items that we could potentially purchase right away that could make an impact right away. Some of those include switching from gas to heat pumps at some of our buildings, and all electric mowers to replace some mowers that are now diesel or gasoline within our parks. There's various other items as well. I think, you know, the tendency might be to say, well, let's look at some of the smaller equipment at this time as well. But what we're experiencing on the ground is that we have some of the smaller equipment that is battery operated as we speak. But unfortunately, it's not quite up to the standard of the gas powered equipment that we have. We know that we need to replace those things. But what we're thinking is, if we can, in this first year or the first period that we're going to be doing this, focus on some of the larger items that will definitely have an impact, we're hoping that technology will increase a little bit. And as we go in the next round, because I'm kind of looking at this as, this will probably be something the commissioners will want to consider as a recurring expense going forward to get ourselves off of the gas-powered equipment, things like that. So I think that the technology will catch up more if we wait just a little bit longer on the smaller equipment. I think with the mowers and things like that, because of the advances that have come about because of automobiles that are going all electric, and that's happening so quickly, that some of these, like the mowers and the larger equipment, is a little bit ahead of the smaller equipment. It's coming along, and we can see things in the near future, like the new F-150 that will be electric, that's coming out, that we probably won't be able to get our hands on because they'll probably all be sold before they hit the lots. But once those vehicles come about and we have those options out there, we could be carrying more batteries for the battery packs for the weed eaters, string trimmers, and blowers and things like that within the vehicles that could be charging, instead of having to go back to the shop every time we need a new battery that runs out, which is which takes time and ends up making the job quite a bit longer, which increases labor costs and things like that. So I would recommend that we look at these bigger projects first. I think that we can get a lot of bang for our buck right off the bat. And there's definitely a lot of room to do a lot of different things. So I don't think we'd be wasting any time or money by looking at bigger projects to begin with, waiting for those smaller items, smaller tools to catch up in the technology. So I wanted to just give that preface really quick. Sean and Bill and Wes and Jason were involved in some demos, and that you probably read about in the staff report. They've done a lot of research. Sean's done a lot of research, and I just want to turn it over to him now to run you through what they've been able to find out with the equipment that they've looked at so far. Okay.
All right, so we reached out to a vendor who we've been in contact over the years, and he was able to bring down a 72-inch mower for a demo that a lot of the maintenance crew got to get hands-on experience with. He is going to be dropping off a 72-inch mower and a 60-inch mower to us in the next couple weeks. I'm still working out the schedule on that. And so he's going to leave us with those for a week. And so our maintenance staff will have the time to really test them out and get some in-park testing on how they would work day to day. They've got a 7-hour lifespan, so that it should have no impact on operations if that lifespan actually turns out to be true. They are in the process of setting up a dealer in the valley. So parts and service would be available. A lot of the parts are just kind of plug and play, like how you would fix an appliance. You take out the part and plug it in. And we are looking at getting a diagnostic computer and some spare parts on hand so our mechanics can troubleshoot on the ground so we don't necessarily have to take them in to get serviced for quick fixes. So that is the plan on those. And I'll just kind of quickly go through and then open it up for questions. Michael kind of touched on that, on switching out to electric vehicles, so I won't kind of go into that. EV charging stations, I've been speaking with City of Ashland Conservation Division, and they're looking at a price or cost share. They are looking to expand installing EV charging stations around town. And so we're looking at our properties, and we would cover the installation and the labor and service, electric service, and they would purchase the equipment and then subsidize the electricity cost from $5,000 to $2,000 per year based on usage. So that cost wouldn't be shipped over to us. And these charging stations can be made available to the public, available to staff for personal vehicles, and common parking areas. And then we can also look at installing these in preparation for switching over to an electric vehicle fleet, because we would have to have ways to charge them set up prior to moving in that direction. So we're in the process of taking a look at the electric capacity we have at various facilities throughout the park system. And then the last bit of information was requested by Commissioner Bell. So we listed all of our facilities with square footage. And then we just went ahead and put notes in there about what the gas and electric costs were for 2020 and made some general notes about potential for solar. And that's just staff taking a look at it, an aerial map. So it hasn't been... we haven't had any solar companies come in and evaluate this at this time. Attached to the memo, you can see quotes for the mower. So for a 72-inch and a 60-inch, we would be looking at almost $70,000 plus about $10,000 for parts and a diagnostic computer. And I also included the brochure from the company of the mowers that were brought down, which is Mean Green. And this is a company where I found that there are other jurisdictions in the country, or there are some golf courses, when they switch over to electric, this seems to be the company that that entities go to. Compared to other commercial grade equipment, the battery life is way better than other companies out there, sometimes by double.
Sean?
Julian.
When you talked to the fellow, the representative, about the duration of the battery, did they mention anything about the time it takes to recharge it? In other words, like, you know, if you spend 7 hours driving it around, can you recharge it by the morning, or is it longer than that?
Yes, if we got the 240 volt charger rather than the 120, it can be done overnight.
Okay, is that a big change in the cost?
I don't think so. No, it's not. I believe it's the equipment is the same price. The only additional expense may be, and there may not be any because we may be able to have a city electrician do it, is to provide a 240 outlet.
Yeah, and all the chargers we're talking about will be 240, I'm sure, because that gives you the quickest turnaround time on a commercial basis or on a charging around town basis. And I guess getting back to what Michael's presentation was, I think we've had a year to think about this. So in my thinking, I realized that we want to try to go to the vehicles that use the most fuel, as opposed to maybe highly polluting engines and things like that. So I think this 72 and 60 inch mowers, it's pretty exciting because if this pans out, it seems like our fleet of mowers is getting pretty old. And so hopefully we could, if this works out and the trial basis, I'm hopeful that we could have a full meeting to bring the rest of the commission up to speed on what we're doing here, because you know, it's really is finally getting some traction on this. And you know, diesels, it will reduce carbon use, but also the oxides of nitrogen on diesel engines, especially these utility vehicles, you know, so we could kind of save that as well. So I think this factory reducing diesel is better than just reducing fuel. And then I guess my question is, if we've researched any of the quad runner type things, you see them going all over town, going to changing out the cleaning up the trash cans and going around the different parks. That seems like another utility vehicle that might have some battery powered options out there, just to research that. Not that we should buy them, but I think the researching part's important to me, that hopefully this trial basis works out for the mowers and everybody likes them and the battery use seems to hold up. And so, you know, we're finally getting some movement forward. So I would assume we'd have the trial basis, have staff give us the recommendations, and then we go to the full commission to move to the purchase of that. Does that sound like something we might be doing, Michael?
Yes, it would be. I just want to say really quick, we do have some electric kind of gator is what they're called, right?
Correct me if I'm wrong. I think we have at least two. Is that right?
We have two. We have one in Lithia.
And one at North Mountain.
Yeah, we have one at Lithia and one at North Mountain.
Okay, we have two of them right now.
Yeah.
But yeah, I think that definitely is an option to look into those, because they are used quite a bit. We do have one that's diesel. That diesel one is actually really powerful, though, and it's like we talked about, it's able to pull around larger equipment, and we'd just be looking for something that could replace that, so we're not replacing that small thing with a full-size truck, you know, because that's basically what it functions as right now, as far as pulling. But as far as the process goes, you know, once you guys brainstorm this and you decide on the things that you think would be appropriate, we can take those all back to the Parks Commission. And then I think they just, because this is a new program, I think the motion was made to bring the expenses back to the Parks Commission so they can see how it's being spent. So,
Wes, did you have something to say?
Yeah, I was just going to touch on the fact we have the little gators that Michael's referring to. We do have two in and out of the parks. We have, you know, at least three in the fleet. This is an ever-evolving technology. That's why it's always good to revisit. The ones we currently have eight lead-acid batteries under the beds. They're little dump beds. They don't really have a very high top-end travel speed. So that's one of the reasons you don't see them traveling around town a ton more in the park. They're great little vehicles. And so, you know, as the technology evolves, we can have vehicles that could potentially be traveling on the road a little more because of their speed and ability to, you know, hold the charge longer. But the thing, after we demoed the Mean Green mowers and Sean had them come down, the exciting thing is just the overall park experience. They are extremely quiet. And so that's going to allow staff to not be so intrusive. When I pull into a park on that large mower, the 5900, it is extremely loud, and it's very hard to get any work done if there's park patrons enjoying. You almost have to leave and go to a different one and come back, and you're almost wasting time driving around town to find a vacant park. In the summer, it's hard to do. So I think that'll be nice.
Great, thanks. Julian.
So a couple of questions about the process. So we have $150,000 theoretically to spend, I think, right? So if this, if we were to buy the 60-inch and the 72-inch mower and we spend $80,000, then we still have something around $70,000 that is there to be spent in, at some point. So the other things that seem to come to mind to me are that I know that we, you already talked about the small engines, Michael, and you know, the technology isn't maybe equivalent to the gas-powered engines, but it does seem like there's at least some value for replacing some of those things, perhaps. You know, for example, the leaf blowers, which we get a lot of complaints about in our inboxes, might be one thing to potentially replace. And I don't know what the half, I don't know what the lifespan of the batteries for those are, but you know, it seems that if we had, if they were inexpensive and we bought four times the total number of the devices, you could you could get somewhere close to the same efficiency without necessarily spending a lot of money, because they're not, I don't think they're
the most expensive. So they are, we actually use more of an industrial version of battery powered equipment than you could, than you would find in a typical store. So the battery powered equipment that we have is Still brand, which is a good brand. It's really good brand. But the batteries are large and they go on a backpack on your back. And then there's a cable that goes from that to the equipment. And we have purchased several of them, and unfortunately they are very expensive. I'm not sure, Sean, if we have a comparison between a gas powered and one of these, but as I recall, we're spending over $1,000 per unit for the battery powered units. Does that sound right, Sean?
Yeah, that sounds right. And typically right now the there's not as much output, so the electric blowers don't function well. And Wes and Bill, please jump in where you see fit. But from what I've been told, they don't function well in the fall where there's lots of wet leaves. The power's not there to actually move along. And some of the we've been testing out electric string trimmers at Nature Center. And in some applications, they function properly, but when you're getting into high, thick weeds, the power isn't quite there yet. And it requires multiple batteries that need to be swapped out on a regular basis. And without a way to have batteries on site that are completely recharging, the logistics of it decrease time efficiency.
A follow-up question is, so we also have a list of APRC buildings that are being heated with natural gas. And it seems that, and I didn't, maybe I missed it when I looked through, when I went through your review, but it, do we, is one of the quotes that you have for replacing the natural gas HVAC systems? No.
No, I just have the annual cost of what we pay in natural gas. So we haven't done any, we don't have any quotes on replacement cost at this time.
Well, I guess, and so that was what it seemed to me. But if it were possible, since we have, it seems like we have enough money to potentially replace two of the natural gas HVAC systems for two of our buildings, maybe it would be possible to get quotes for two of the buildings, the senior center and the golf course, perhaps.
Yeah, I think we could do that. We can definitely get quotes for those.
Okay.
We want to move on from the maintenance equipment, and it, the way I see it right now is staff's going to evaluate and then it'll come back to us, or maybe not, just go to the full commission for a report so we can move ahead quickly on those units. And then I agree, the HVAC systems, and looking at the list, for me, the important part of the list would be which systems are the oldest systems and are the least efficient systems, because there's several types of natural gas heaters. Some are, the older ones are 80% efficient, which means you just don't, it's not good use of the natural gas. And then there's the 98% efficient ones. So if we were going to replace an older system, it might be better to look at those first. So it's really just a matter of going and look at each individual unit and evaluating the age of it. And I think the therm use of it, will eventually move towards, my hope is we'll move towards to replacing them all as the budget cycles move forward. And also, we shouldn't worry too much about the solar exposure on some of these buildings, because the way I see it is we need to find good areas to collect solar energy and then put that in our citywide grid system, as opposed to needing to have a spot where we're going to replace the HVA system. It isn't really as important as just getting a lot more photovoltaics out in the sun and recouping the electrons that way, as opposed to needing it to be near some unit. So I see that as a separate issue. We should be evaluating parks areas for the city to use for photovoltaic arrays, I think. And we want to be major players in that. And if we have areas of parking lots that we could shade and have a array system, it doesn't have to be on a building necessarily. There's communities that use different systems of collecting. So that's a whole nother area that we should put down for evaluation as well. Julian?
So one question that I had is, I know that there, so when I, at several meetings ago, when I asked for some sort of further information about the potential for solar electricity for the swimming pool, the thing that struck me was that we, since Ashland already buys hydroelectric energy or electricity anyway, the value that you get for buying new solar photovoltaic cells to power our equipment seems to be relatively modest. I mean, at least in terms of greenhouse gas emission reduction, I think it would provide us with independence from the grid. But as far as the, comparing on-site solar to the hydroelectric power we have, I don't know that there's a huge greenhouse gas benefit to having on-site solar. And so it seems to me that if the money that we have is meant to be spent to decrease greenhouse gas emissions, that maybe focusing on replacing the HVAC systems and maintenance equipment, and if the most practical is the larger equipment, then it seems like those things would be the targets for me. So I see that you've done quite a lot of work to go into the solar or the potential for solar in the APRC properties. And I think, at face value, it sounds like a good idea, but I wonder how much actual benefit we're going to get if we're already buying hydroelectric electricity. So, my personal focus would be on spending the money to replace HVAC systems. And I think you're right. I mean, starting with the oldest, least efficient ones and working our way towards the newer ones is the way to go. But I guess I would spend all the money on, most of the remainder of the money, I guess, on replacing HVAC systems.
And I noticed in our budget talks, anything that dealt with array systems and photovoltaics necessarily, but we did discuss a lot about maintenance vehicles and the HVAC systems, and that's a carbon reduction right there. And I kept talking about, hey, well, it's hydroelectric and this, and a guy reminded me that, well, actually conservation is the key to the thing. If we can use less of any electricity, it's a benefit. That way there's more for the grid. And so we shouldn't get lost on the things that are policy decisions and don't really have a huge budget issue. In fact, if we can reduce anywhere incrementally across our whole system, it's a benefit for everybody. So and the city's set up for that. I mean, the city's been working on putting array systems up, and they feel it's valuable to have a certain amount of our own collection that we can reduce spinning the Bonneville power meter. It would be advantageous to us as a community. And so I see we want to join in with the city at any chance we have to get with the city, just like in the charging stations. I mean, I am completely on board with that. The more charging stations there are, the better. And every year there are going to be more electric vehicles in our town. So we'll be, if we can stay slightly ahead of that curve, it'd be great. So we did budget money for maintenance and HVAC, and I think that, I don't think it'd be that hard to look at each heating unit in our inventories and kind of see the age and which one, and the therm use as well, because you would see an 80% efficient one would tend to have higher therm use than a 98%. So that would be something to be important to me in making that decision and recommending it to the commission. And because, you know, we still kind of want to evaluate this lithium battery mower thing. I think I mean, it's exciting to hear, and I'm listening to staff. Staff's the ones that are going to be the people I form my opinion on. So you guys know mowers, and you know, so I'm kind of excited to see how this all works out in the trial basis, and we should have a ribbon cutting for these new mowers, tell you the truth. We want the city to know about what we're doing, because it is important.
Exactly. And Julian, we are always constantly looking at what type of small equipment that is the most effective and you know, save staff time. A lot of these small electric, we have a few chainsaws that aren't running for an extended period of time that work really well and aren't putting, you know, basically two-stroke, you're just burning oil into the air. So we do have things like that we use. The smaller string trimmers and blowers, when the motor and battery have to run for, I want to say about 40 minutes is all we can run them for at full bore before they die. The battery and the motor heat up really, really easily when you do that. And then that, you know, shortens the lifespan. So we are constantly looking at it. The technology is just not there, but we're always trying to be innovative and seeing what new technologies are out and when we can jump on that. So.
Great.
Anything else on those issues?
This is maybe it's a related but somewhat separate topic. You know, I think that most of what we're talking about at the moment is related to the $150,000 that was set aside for replacing equipment. Maybe, Michael, I don't know if you might be able to go over this perhaps, but do you have an expectation for another proposal for the HVAC system for the pool, or the a list of different things that we're going to be investigating?
Yeah, that would be something different, and we do expect to have something coming back to the Parks Commissioners. You know, it's been, we've kind of put it down for just a little bit, but it's getting picked back up now. I actually am meeting with the pool designer tomorrow to talk about this, and to also talk about potentially doing a smaller, an alternative version of the pool that the commissioners can look at to see, you know, if you did want to reduce the size of the pool to increase or decrease energy usage or to decrease the price, that's something you can look at as well. Now, understanding that this is just being brought to you as a suggestion, or not a suggestion, an option. We've already made a recommendation on what we think the best design for the pool is, but I think that is what the commissioners were looking for, is what are all of the options to reduce costs and energy use at the pool? So we're bringing you back as many as we can. So.
Okay. All right. Thank you.
Picking up on a point Julian made earlier about Bonneville Power and that we buy it wholesale. I think when we looked at the figures for heating the pool, the highest figure was the resistance heating. Basically just electric hot water heaters heating the pool was probably the least efficient way, but it surely was the most economical way for installation, you know. And so I think we really, even though it might seem somewhat wasteful, we're saving a huge amount of carbon if we just get off the natural gas completely for the pool. And then we work towards the resistance heat will be using an incredible amount of electricity to heat it, but I guess offsetting that is we get a really good price on it, and we can work in the future to maybe coming up with these chillers and the compressor, and you know, and I think Julian made the point that the coolants also have a issue with the atmosphere as well if we have a release of the coolant. When we look at the way we heat the pool, I think we want to look at it a little broader issue. That would be my recommendation to the commission.
Okay.
All right. Anything else on the greenhouse gas reduction? Looks like no hands going up. I will move to setting the next meeting date. Yeah, Julian, you're up. Check your schedule.
I know I'm the weak link in the chain here. Are we aiming for 1 month from now, 2 months from now?
I would hope it's sometime after the evaluation for the mowers. It's going to happen, I think, mid-June, and then there's a one-week evaluation. Wes, how long you guys get these mowers?
A week, yes.
You get a week to try them out and mow the heck out of the place and give them a good hard run and see how they hold up. Well, and then it would be nice to get together, not too much after that, hear what you guys recommend, and then so we can recommend and get this thing moving along at whatever bureaucratic light speed we have.
Our next meeting is July 7th, is that, do I have that right? Sorry, pardon me, our next meeting in July anyway is July 7th, is that?
A study session, the full commission study session is July 7th tentative, and the business meeting is July 14th.
Well, I could meet July 1st potentially, or the week of June 29th, 30th, 31st. Which is the weekend before July 4th.
As long as the trial basis is over and staff's evaluated, and then, you know, and if it works out in a tight schedule and we can't schedule another conservation meeting, maybe we could do it at the study session and have the recommendation and the discussion, and then we could slam the gavel on the 14th, you said? So I think, or whenever our business meeting is in July.
Oh, sure.
Yeah.
Yeah, the week of June 28th through July 2nd, I could potentially meet. So, for example, June 29th at 2 p.m.
Like I say, if staffs have done evaluating, that's my criteria. After this 1 week trial basis, whatever day that is, but if it doesn't work out efficiently, let's just go with the standard. We all show up at the study session and somebody from staff shows up and gives us the lowdown on these mowers. And then we can move from there. I don't know. Does anybody have a problem with that one? Because we kind of leave it in limbo. It's all whenever the end of the week of evaluation is, I think, and then after that. So whether Julian, whether you can fit that in, I don't know that that's imperative that we have a meeting, not that we shouldn't for other reasons, but it seemed like we should move this thing along, and like I say, if these mowers work, we want to get them out there and keep in charge and keep them running, wear them out.
Well, so do you think it's realistic to think that we would have, that we could get a quote on replacing some of the HVAC systems from our buildings by the week of June 28th to July 2nd?
Well, you know, it's so hard to get those kind of contractors out in the first place right now. I think we could get them out and we could try to get the quotes back from them by then, but I wouldn't want to promise it just because they're so busy that sometimes they're not even showing up to their appointments. So, but we'll give it a shot. We'll do what we can.
Okay. And then Sean, did you say, I know you said the mowers are going to be here for a week. Did you say what week it was? I'm sorry.
I'm still working that out. I think it is going to be the week of the 14th, but we're still, so that's still a little bit up in the air. And so since things are up in the air, we could play it by ear until I get solid dates on when the mowers are going to be here, so we can be sure to have the evaluation and I can circle back.
I'm sorry, I didn't mean to interrupt you. Would it be possible to put a meeting on the books for the 29th at 2 p.m. and then cancel it if we don't have either the mower demonstration or the HVAC quotes together? I mean, if we don't have any further information, then I don't think there's a point in having a meeting. But if you had a chance to evaluate the mowers and if we have quotes to look at, then we could, you know, devise something like a shopping list for the commission, the full commission to approve.
Yeah.
So I think, Julian, if you pencil in the 29th at 2, I'm pretty flexible. I think we could, if there is information and it'd be worth having a meeting, I'd be glad to be part of that. So,
I'll put it on my calendar. If there's no information, then I don't think there's a purpose in having a meeting or no new information. But if we do have the quotes and if you've had a chance to use the mowers, then we should try and come up with a shopping. I mean, in my view, anyway, we should try and come up with a shopping list that we can present to the full council for them to say yes or no to.
And I think on the HVAC, I'd get back to the oldest ones should be looked at the closest in renewing. If we have a 1 or 2 year old HVAC system, we want to put that down in the queue a little bit because and evaluate how many therms they use too. I don't know. We just had a dollar figure on how much is spent. But I think the guy in conservation, the staff guy, had some therms on there. And obviously the swimming pool was kind of astronomical in carbon use. And so, and then the rest of the units were all kind of in the same ballpark, you know? Where's the best bang for our buck and utilizing this other 80,000 that we potentially have. All right, so we're tentative set June 29th at 2 p.m. Is that, yeah? And
I just sent a calendar invite to everybody to hold the day.
Okay. Any other comments, anything?
One last thing for Director Black. So just to confirm, Stu Green had sent me a year-by-year review of the amount of natural gas that the pool had been using, and you've had a chance to look at that, I'm sure.
Yeah, I saw your email today. I looked at it today. That's the one with the therms, right?
Yeah.
Well, yeah, there was one that I sent today, but there's one from, I'm not sure how long ago now, but Stu Green, this is related to the
pool. Oh, yes, I have looked at that, yeah.
Yeah, so it's, you know, it seems like that has the potential to modify the cost of the HVAC system the chiller system that the pool might use. So I'm sure you've already brought that up with Sherwood Robinson.
Yeah, and I'm looking at that again right now. So, okay, I see it, yeah.
It just seems like there was a significant step up in 2016, I think, in the total amount of...
It was 2019. It was a really big step up in 2019.
And I think
from
it was
like 17 to 21... thousand.
Right. And if I understand correctly, it was related to keeping the pool open late and through the winter. And so it seems like another way to potentially decrease the amount of natural gas used by the pool would be to reassess whether, or to consider whether it might be worth limiting the hours rather than the size of the pool or the, or, you know.
Right.
Yeah, you know, I mean, that's another way.
Well, it's a tough, that's a really tough one because, I would actually look at that a little differently. Maybe, I think we've already identified what the community use is of the pool, what the need is for the use. Maybe the discussion should be more around looking at increasing the budget to cover the pool as opposed to limiting the hours, because I think it's already been established that the community is in desperate need of a pool for many different users. And maybe the discussion should be more around how do we have those users in there year round without losing all of that energy that's being put into the pool.
Sure, or whether those users could be contributing more to the support of the pool.
That, yes, I agree with that as well. And that's part of the natural process that we will be looking at. And that's one of the reasons why we're looking at the smaller pool too, because if they're not going to contribute the way that they should, then I don't know that we should necessarily be building such a big pool. So there's more to everything, right? So, I agree. But the reason why we're doing the operations during the winter is because there's a need there that can't be met any other way at this point. So
yeah,
if they were to find a different way to meet that need, we could reduce those costs. But I would be worried about the school district. For instance, if the school district said, well, fine, we'll just build our own pool, then that really doesn't reduce energy costs. It only reduces it for us. For the community, there's probably double the energy wasted if they were to build a second pool. And, we were heating two pools when we could have heated just one pool. So anyways, so it makes sense to the one pool and do what we can to work with them, to get them at the right price, and to do what we can to reduce the loss from heat, from evaporate or being out there in the cold and everything. So,
yeah, and the evaporative losses maybe is another issue, another reason.
It is another issue, and we actually have figures for evaporative loss as well. So it's a lot of evaporation, but so we can look at that as well. We'd be happy to share that.
Okay. Well, I know that doesn't really directly relate to this committee, but
that's okay.
Anyhow, thanks for going over that.
It's no problem at all.
Anything else? Okay. I'm going to thank everybody for cooperating and being part of the meeting, and I'm going to adjourn the conservation subcommittee.
Thank you.
See you later.
Thank you.
We'll see you.
Bye-bye.